Hi, we are live here at the EGX Expo in London. This is the Reused Assets podcast, and we're going to give you just a few thoughts on stuff around on the show floor, some of the stuff we've seen, some of the stuff we've not seen, and some of the up-to-the-minute queue information, which will be completely useless. So it's me, it's Seth, and I'm joined with Mike.
Yo.
That's a Mike yo. Easy question is, I'll go for any particular standout title as of yet. I mean, we're halfway through the second day at the moment, so got a good idea of pretty much most things on show. So is there sort of anything that you think particularly stands out, Mike?
I'd say based on the fact that playing it made me think, ooh, I want a Wii U, I want it now. I'd probably have to go with Bayonetta 2 on that one.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed that. I liked the first one, but I kind of had enough of it by the end, but just sort of 20, 25 minutes on it yesterday, and it was kind of like, ooh, I could play this again, I think.
Yeah, I can't remember much about playing the first game now, so I don't know how different it really is, but, you know, the scale of everything is sort of, it's just pretty much in terms of having big batshit insane moments and scenes and that, it's got that down.
There were in the whatever it was 20 minute slice that we played, it's like about three or four sections, and quite a lot of stuff got pretty well destroyed by massive monsters. And you know, you start off by riding on the wings of a jet and fighting this stuff as it lands, and then at one point something cleaves through your jet and it explodes, and you end up just kind of flying along on a part of it, and it's all slightly explodey.
Yeah, it's a Platinum Games joint, all right. you can pretty much tell that.
Yeah, much stuff explodes. Yeah. Anything else?
Ooh. What was I thinking of now?
Little Big Planet.
Little Big Planet 3. Yes, that there's a good one. So I like what the so the demo had two of the new characters that are going to be part of the game. There's the, what is it, toggle that you can use to change sort of, that he changes sizes, and
big toggle or something.
Sort of, yeah, and it sort of uses sort of very much, sort of, you get some sort of physics based things where, you know, you make him big that sort of lowers a spring platform, and then as soon as you switch to small again, you basically get catapulted off into the distance. And there's also the I forget the name, but the sort of dog like thing that's on all fours running. I think it's Odd Sock or something like that.
Odd Sock.
And sort of the ability to sort of wall jump and cling to like moving sort of walls to get to other areas. And I think that's got sort of freshen things up a bit, sort of adds some sort of new dynamics to it, and sort of makes things a bit more interesting. Sort of.
Yeah, I found the levels felt a bit bigger, and I found that they seemed a little bit more complex, insofar as you relied on a lot more puzzle mechanic rather than just physics-based sort of platforming to get through a level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the levels weren't, so they're big in size, they weren't particularly long, and sort of a lot of, I don't know, it'd just be, sort of be interesting to see. I don't know whether they've said whether there's sort of going to be levels where, I would assume there's levels where you're going to sort of switch between them all, or I wonder if there's any, I don't know if there's anything where there's going to be something where you might have to change between one in the middle of something. I don't know whether that's a thing, but
don't know if they mentioned it. Didn't come across it in what we played, so I don't know whether it will be like in the previous games where you would have sections that only you could go through with two players or more. So I presume maybe it will be the same, maybe you'll have sections you can't go through without certain characters. I don't know. I think this one will sort of integrate online play. Right, I know the other series had well sort of integrated online play, but I think they're taking it a bit further in this one by sort of relying on a lot of the puzzle mechanics in that. So that was quite good. I thought that was pretty enjoyable, even though I managed to break it at one point. Carrying on Barry's tradition of breaking stuff at Eurogamer, so he'll be pleased about that.
He's here in spirit. He's here in spirit, if not in body.
Yeah, he'll be disgusted to find out that, you know, I've not played Assassin's Creed in any way. So no, Mike hasn't either. So this year, no one would have played Assassin's Creed, Barry. It's over. That's it.
There's still time. Yeah, it still could happen.
Nah. Anything else? Anything sort of strike you from like the Resd or Left Field or the indie stuff that's up and around?
So the one thing that's been occupying myself with, or that I've been thinking about a lot, is this game called The Marvelous Mistake, that's it. It's being developed by sort of a bunch of ex-Lionhead people and a couple of other industry vets. It's a stealth type game. You sort of, everything's controlled sort of with the left mouse button, basically. You click where you want to go, and it has various things like there's various guards around that you have to try, and basically use various tactics to distract them, like whistling or even going so far as running to get their attention. I was going to say something then. It's completely slipped my mind.
It looks quite nice. It looks it's quite bright and colourful. I know it may be a game called like the Marvel's Mistake. Might well look like, but for a sort of independent product, I think it's got quite a strong sort of aesthetic to it.
Yeah. The other thing that I've just remembered what I was going to say now. What's interesting about it is that the guards don't move to specific patterns. Their movements are quite random. So if you fail and go and redo a floor again, you're going to have to sort of look at it again and take a completely different tack, because you don't know. The guards don't have paths, so they could, like, one time they could go around one side of something, they could go straight towards you. So that's why you have to use the distraction tactics to sort of get around them. You can't just wait for them to go somewhere and then dodge around them. So that sort of adds a little extra bit of sort of strategy to it, and makes it more challenging when you're sort of going through it again. So I suppose means it's not a simple case of like in any other game where you can just think, okay, I did this wrong last time, I'm going to do this. It makes you think each time you do it, because you can't just think, okay, this didn't work. You just have to look at it fresh each time and think, right, well, what are they doing this time?
Yeah,
let's go with that.
Makes it a bit more dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've not played that one yet.
I'd have seen it when in the section, but I've not played it. It looks quite good. There seems to be quite a few games using that sort of similar kind of stealth mechanic. There was that one. There's a Volume as well, and I'm sure I've seen a couple of others doing something a little bit similar. Not all the same, but they've all gone for that sort of isometric kind of view, with a few other sort of stealthy things thrown in. So. Yeah, I don't know. Anything else? Anything else tickle your gaming whatnot?
I'm just trying to think what I played particularly. Let's see.
What about... there seems to be quite a selection of car racing games this time. You got Forza Horizon 2, you've got Project Cars, you've got Drive Club, and you've got The Crew. I think that's all of them.
That's all the major ones.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of others dotted around.
Yeah, so, I've played all of them but The Crew this time. I played The Crew, last time. I haven't played it since. But for me, Drive Club, I think, has made a massive improvement over last year's showing when they pushed it back. Graphically, it's looking a lot nicer. Handling's much better. Seems to have a really good sense of speed. So if I remember rightly from last year, just didn't seem to have much sense of speed when you're actually driving it. I don't know how you found Drive Club last year.
There's anything that I didn't really notice much about the speed last time. It was more the handling thing for me, because I was finding myself just... I found myself on a couple of occasions not even being able to sort of somehow keep the car together in a straight line on some occasions, which was a bit weird. And so if it didn't... The handling combined with the fact that I remember the track from last year that I played on was a lot of corners, basically. It was sort of a very twisty, turny thing. And I found myself spinning that many times, whereas this time it was much more... It was more a case of if you ended up throwing yourself off the road, it was your fault rather than the handling, really.
Yeah, I found that whenever I went off the road, it's because I was just sort of hammering it to see how, basically to try out the handling a bit, and to just see how fast I could get around the corner.
So I think as much as I've heard people say, they've made a mistake with delaying it. I don't know whether that's true from sort of a sales perspective, because it was meant to be a launch title originally for the PS4. But I think in terms of the actual game itself, I think pushing it back has done it a lot of good. It feels like, because I think it felt like almost as if they were rushing to get it through. It felt like they'd rushed to get it through, so to have that time to actually work on it properly seems to have done it a world of good. So
yeah,
compared to last year, I'm actually looking forward to it being released now, whereas last year I wasn't interested after playing it, so.
Yeah, no, I had no interest afterwards. It was nice that it was coming out. In fact, the only interesting part was that they were going to give away the slightly cut down version on PS Plus.
Still doing.
Yes, yeah, you get basically a fifth of the game, I believe. So, I mean, that's out next month, I think, sometime in October.
Yeah,
that's quite good. Project Cars was okay. The handling wasn't the best. It looked okay until you sort of put it up against Drive Club and Forza 2. But for me, I don't know if you've played it yet, but I sort of Forza 2 was probably one of the games that handled the best, looked the best. There's some great weather effects in there. Driving through a mountain range, it starts to rain and you get the road all slicking and you get the sheens and the car will actually, you know, get wet and you see the water ripping off the car. But then as it sort of starts drying up, the car still looks wet and it kind of has this weird kind of bobbly effect on it that makes it look like actual metal drying. So it's pretty cool.
I was really interested by the fact that sort of the courses as well don't simply stick to the roads here. There's sort of I found one where you're going through this field of grass to go to another road.
Yeah.
That's curious because I'm looking for the line. I'm thinking I can't see it properly because the grass is over it. I see another car off in the distance. I think follow him. He knows where he's going.
Yeah, you're looking for the racing line, which is the usual kind of hatch marks on the floor, and just disappears into a waist high field of green grass. And it's like, where's it gone? But I found that quite fun actually.
Yeah, so it's just okay, right? Well, I can see the tracks vaguely over that way, so I just find myself barreling over hills and stuff, and just say, right, I think that's the best of the car games I've played, which is kind of a contrast to sort of last year where I played Forza 5 and came away from it feeling very sort of I didn't dislike it, but it was just sort of I wasn't as enthusiastic for it as I had been for previous games.
It was just
whereas Horizon 2 like is much more sort of enjoyable, and maybe it's not a typical Forza game because of all the off-roading and sort of just the street racing type thing. So
it's arcade-based handling, isn't it?
I mean,
it's still got good handling, but it varies. It's more towards sort of arcade-based handling, really, is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm looking at these games, and I'm wondering where sort of up against the likes of Drive Club and Forza, where Project Cars is gonna fare. Because I played that and all I thought of when I walked away was this is a racing game and just nothing else. It was just like it didn't wow me. It was just there basically.
Yeah.
It was just
what I found odd was in some ways is that you had I've forgotten the name of the team, but the people that made Drive Unlimited. Unlimited 2, they were published and through Namco and stuff, and then the studio got closed, and then four years later, Test Drive Unlimited, that's it, I think. Then 4 years later or whatever it is, they come up with this, Namco publishing this Project Cars game, which quite honestly could have probably been made by that studio. it's just a bit weird. So but certainly Forza 2 looked played pretty well. So I'm looking forward to that one, really. What else was it? I've seen a few other nice little titles. Alien Isolation, I had a quick go on that. That was good fun.
the challenge level. You haven't seen that, have you? They were showing a video on the screen earlier as well. But that was good fun. Very atmospheric, lots of dark corners and like billowing kind of smoke effects and lights and stuff. And challenge map that you're on, you have to get from point A to point B basically through the ship corridors. And there is one alien sort of stalking through the corridors, and you have to make your way through. Yeah, crouching slowly but surely, going around vents and things like that. You get the little scanner up with the little blips going, and it will show you where the alien is if it's nearby, and another one will indicate whether it's hunting you and stuff like that. So that's quite good, really atmospheric, and just sort of just leapt out at you. So I enjoyed that. We played a nice indie game that was called Never Alone, which I quite enjoyed. That was kind of a black and white, soft focus aesthetic, sort of think Limbo esque when you sort of see it. You play, I believe it was an Eskimo girl, I think. It might have been a boy, I didn't ask. A little husky or wolf, and it's up to two players, and or you can do it single player and swap between characters, and it's just a left to right platform game really, where you sort of jump gaps, traverse bits and pieces. There's some like mild puzzles where someone will have to go and sort of scramble up as the wolf to a section and weigh it down so that it drops a rope so that the Eskimo can then climb up and get to the next platform, or the Eskimo will have a crate or something to drag along that's got a platform underneath it, and then the dog and the husky can jump on that and get moved across. And I don't know, I found it quite engaging. I thought it controlled quite well and looked quite good. I don't know what you thought on it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought sort of the way the differences between the two sort of things sort of complemented each other quite well. I think that's definitely a game that's going to sort of be at its best playing with somebody else. I think, you know, you can play on your own, but I think that game is definitely going to shine playing co-op with somebody else.
It could suffer from a lot of maybe sort of stop-start, and sort of ruin the flow of it, I suppose, if you're doing it as a single player.
Although I don't know whether it's going to work slightly different for a single player or what, I don't know, but once we got going, sort of figuring out the patterns. I'm like, hang on, those green sort of spirits that fly around and grab you are a particular pain in the arse.
yeah, it was sort of like, ooh, that's shiny, what does that do? Oh, I'm dead again. Bugger. Yeah, so that was good. I think they said that's out next month on Steam, and then sort of PS4 and Xbox One at a later date. So yeah, I found that was quite a nice little title. And played another one, A Light in Chorus. I don't know if you played. Did you play A Light in Chorus?
I haven't got around to that one. No.
That's basically. It's a bit hard to describe that one. It's basically an all black playfield, and then everything within that playfield is made up with just dots of light, different coloured dots of light. So rather than having a rendered texture, what they've done is sort of rendered little points of light on each surface of where a texture would be. And excuse me. And what you end up with is quite a striking visual where everything seems to be made up of just floating particles, and that's the world in general. You kind of have a sketched outline in particles of like building sites and trees and the floor, and you go through this section as you explore, and it explains to you how to do different things, like how to manage the inventory and things like that with a click of the mouse button or pressing E to open it up. So you go through all of that, and you end up in this sort of large expansed area where you sort of go into a fun land, and you see kind of remnants of a kind of slightly run down carnival. And you just sort of do things like you are partway around on your way to there, you pick up the outline of a sea, and you pick that up and you take that with you, and you then fill out the rest of the sign with it, and that then lights up the rest of the sign, and you move on to the next thing where you go through different areas. And they're basically saying they're going to make it sort of like a natural experience, really, where you play a sort of different animal spirits and stuff like that, where you go around and yeah, I mean, the game that's there at the moment is very bare bones. They're sort of saying they're not going to be launching it probably until nearer 2016. But what they've got on show is quite striking visually. So yeah, I was quite impressed with that, and hopefully over the sort of next year or so we'll see that crop up more and more, because I think it could be certainly one for people that enjoyed Journey, Flower, and Unfinished Swan, things like that. So yeah, I thought that was quite good. Anything else?
The one thing I sort of found interesting at first was a game called Induction. It's sort of the first I sort of, I say, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it. The first impression when I look at it, I was thinking of what game is it now? Is it Cube or something? It reminded me of this, or was it no Edge? That's the game I'm thinking of, where you have the little cube that you move around, and that was the first thing that came to mind, because it visually it looks very much like Edge. But the idea is it's sort of a causality based thing. You move a cube around. It's sort of a puzzle based thing. You move a cube around to move switches and activate bridges and all sorts of things. But then you also have a past version of the cube and a future version of the cube that sort of do similar things. And basically the idea is you have to get the present version to the end, and sort of whatever you do in each instance affects what's going on, but the present will always be moved by you. It's sort of when you basically move your past or future self, and then when you go through, you press whatever button it is, and then it will activate the past and future versions of you doing stuff while you're maneuvering yourself around. So they'll basically do it. It's sort of a causality type thing, so whatever they do will affect what you're doing now. It's kind of a weird game. It's a difficult game to explain, I'm finding, but it's sort of, you know, it's a case of you then have to move obviously your present self to account for what your other versions are doing so you can get through. And it takes a few attempts to get it, to figure out what you're doing, because it sort of maps, because it obviously maps exactly what you've done. So at some point you'll say, right, I want my past self to do that. And so it's coming out next year.
I've seen it in the VC. It's very striking. It's very angular, isn't it? It's very kind of like greys and greens and blues, and so it's got quite a nice look to it. It reminded me a bit of the look of things like Echochrome and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying. I think the first thing, as I say, that I looked at it, looked like a much less colourful version of Edge, like at first glance, and sort of, you know, with the key, without the flashing colours and all that. Basically, it's all very. So I was saying it's sort of interesting, and as I say, I'm probably not doing a very good job of explaining, because it doesn't strike me as a very easy game to explain. It's one of those, to use one of those lines that you always hear, it's one of those things that you have to kind of play to get it.
Yeah, and so it's all about its mechanics, isn't it? And explaining elements of the mechanics is not as effective as actually experiencing the mechanics. So
yeah. And meanwhile, the other thing, which I literally was the last thing I played before I came here, was a game called Poncho. Oh, yeah. Which is sort of it's, as we record this and probably as this comes out, actually it's up on Kickstarter, so it's not. One of those things, but it's a platforming game, so you're obviously you're controlling this little robot chap who's basically, you've got to navigate all the navigate your way around using uses sort of plane shifting type stuff. So you'll have your three layers of platforms, and you have to switch between them to maneuver around. From what I played of it, I don't know whether this is a, probably should have asked really, but there doesn't appear to be anything in the way of sort of combative stuff. It's just sort of obstacles and things, from at least, but you know, I say, with it being Kickstarter, it's probably still at an early stage at this point, so
yeah.
Which I did find it very, there's one point which I basically gave up on it, because it was just frustrating me, because there were sort of these platform, this series of platforms that were switching switching planes all the time, but they weren't necessarily in sync with each other. So you had sort of time you jump and then switch which level you're on to get to the next one.
Yeah.
And you have to basically watch them for quite a while. They are, while they're not in sync, they are each step is following a certain pattern and certain timing. So you have to watch it for a while and then go, okay, so if I jump here, jump this, and sort of you have to switch in midair. And I just couldn't get my head around. I got one point where I got to the very last platform, and because if you're sat on a platform while it shifts, you don't shift with it. You fall. So you have to time it right. So I found myself landing on the last platform, and just in that split second, it shifted. So I fell to my doom. Basically, at that point, I was like,
You know what?
I've had a good go at this. You know, I've tried my best.
I've had a lovely day, thanks. I'll take the money and go home.
I mean, it was interesting up until that point. I get the feeling that I don't know whether it's sort of my impatience or whether it is just that difficult.
But I think also when you're stuck doing, you know, you're playing these games for a bit, you're under the overwatchful eye of one of the devs, or you're under the watchful eye of other people waiting to sort of play, and you're thinking, you know what, I could play this at home at a later date and feel a little less pressure at doing it.
Yeah, probably. So it's sort of, what I played was interesting anyway. Sort of, it doesn't seem like, you know, I didn't see anything. Well, aside from that, sort of, I've never seen sort of the idea of the actual puzzles themselves, or the platforms themselves, being part of the actual shifting. Obviously, it's not the first game to do sort of that sort of idea of having sort of a front, a middle, and a back sort of thing. I mean, no. Little Big Planet was doing that years ago. And sort of, but this is
Mario 3D World and stuff.
You hit a button and it goes that way. So
yeah, okay.
I played a bit of Yoshi's Woolly World. Did you see that?
No, I haven't.
You've not seen Yoshi's Woolly World. I played a bit of that yesterday. It played quite a bit like one of the new Super Mario Brothers games, actually. Like several of you going along. So it wasn't bad. Looks really good. It's got the Kirby's Epic Yarn kind of look to it. You know, everything's made out of wool rather than yarn. I don't know if that's anything different. I cancelled my Knitting World subscription a long time ago, so I just haven't kept up with it. So that was quite good. Very colourful, you know, several Yoshis of varying colour, or Yoshi, on the screen at once. Typical Nintendo fare, really. Just sort of bobbling along, bouncing around. You knock baskets and get little balls of wool out, and you sort of store them behind you. They come behind you like a little trail. And then you can, I think you held down, I was playing with the Wiimote, so you hold down A on that, and it brings out like a guideline that bounces backwards and forwards, you know, up and down, and then you sort of a bit like trying to line up a shot in Buster Move or something like that. So you then line up the shot and release, press the button again to release, and it fires the yarn off, fires the wool off towards the enemy. So yeah, it's quite good. Again, there was an element of kind of stop start to it, and multiplayer, sort of a couple of players on screen sort of working in co-op, is a tend to find you run out of screen space a little bit, which is a bit of a shame. Didn't seem anything particularly offensive, but didn't seem anything particularly mind-blowing. But it's, you know, it's, should be as you'd expect it to be. It's a Yoshi game with wool. I played a bit of that. Anything else for you?
Well, I suppose while we're on the subject of the Wii U, Splatoon, that was one that was there.
Not played that yet, but
no.
It looks good.
So the game that they have on offer is like a Turf Wars thing, you know. Splatoon is sort of like a kind of, it's a kind of a third person shooter in a way.
Yeah.
But you've got a paint gun rather than an actual bullet anyway. So they're doing a Turf War, which basically is multiplayer, and you've got teams of four, and the idea is to, well, as you might suggest, paint as much of the level as you can in your team's colour. You can sort of move, as I say, you move around, and then in order to recharge your, refill your paint, you turn into a squid and duck under the thing. But also, as well as sort of refilling your paint gauge, you also move considerably faster while a squid as well. So it's a good way, it's a really good way to sort of get to the enemy sort of territory and then pop up and start spraying that. It looks looks, it's very extremely colourful, you know, as you'd probably expect from a Nintendo game. I have one gripe with it, which is, could be me just old man, used, you know, getting, well, in gamer terms, probably, being used to the way shooting games work, is aiming, rather than sort of using the sticks for aiming, you have to move the gamepad, which... You don't get very long with the game. You only get a few minutes. You play one round, so you get about 5 minutes. If you're one of the groups that gets the tutorial, you get about 5 minutes. Otherwise, you only get 3 minutes. And I just, even in 5 minutes, I just couldn't get used to aiming that way. I kept wondering. I kept moving the sticks, wondering why I was still looking at the floor, and then suddenly remembered, oh yeah, I've got to move the thing up.
Yeah.
I've got to tilt the thing up, and then I find myself tilting up too far and looking up, and I'm like, I just couldn't adjust to it. It could be just that I'm used to the traditional controls for that sort of game. I don't know whether that will be an option in the full game. I didn't think to ask. For me to want to play it for any long length of time, I'd hope so, because I can see myself getting frustrated with having to aim in that way. I mean, otherwise, it's a fun game otherwise. But I mean, a couple of people on Twitter, I mentioned it on Twitter about saying, you know, I don't like the screen, the using, moving the controller to aim rather than actually pressing a stick. And a couple of people said, oh, is there not a stick, an option to aim with a stick? I said, there wasn't in that. I don't know whether that's a full game thing. Being Nintendo, it probably won't be, because they'll probably want, because, you know, it's the way with sort of first party is, when they've got this fancy technology, they want to make you use it. They're often, because it's theirs, they're often the best ones at using it. But I say, in this case, I'm like, I mean, you know, say, I'm sure, you know, it's maybe probably down to just me being not being used to playing shooters in that way. So
yeah, maybe if you actually got it at home, sort of thing, you play it for half an hour or something, with probably, rather than these like 3 to 5 minute slice, and that's you're out, sort of thing, you actually get a little bit more used to it, and you can actually, you know. You do get used to using the gamepad, so there's loads of stuff like Nintendo Land, things like that do something similar. So it's certainly something you get used to pretty quickly. So yeah, that's good. What else have I looked at? Went and saw Sunset Overdrive. You not seen that?
I haven't got around to that yet. No,
that was okay. They show you to you in a wave-based combat multiplayer session. There's 12 of you, I think it was 12 or 10, I can't remember now. And you're there, and you play one of, I think it was a 5 different roles or something like that, and it's just, yeah, well, as you'd expect, really, you're just progressively getting a little bit of tutorial, then you get used to sort of using the weapons and stuff. It's all third person, running around. The big hook for it is, one, it's Insomniac Games, so there's some crazy weapons, like you fire guns that do fire and damage and stuff like that, and things explode spectacularly. There's an awful lot of stuff exploding on screen in this game, and it's looking quite good. It's got a good section of cartoon visuals, with quite bright and colourful, bit of sort of shell shady kind of outline look to them. I did find it looked a little bit muddy, a little bit like a slightly upscaled 360 or PS3 game. Didn't quite have the sheen and stuff of some of the other Xbox One and PS4 titles doing the rounds. It was good. It moved really well, really fast, really rapid combat. You press, I think it was X or something now, I can't remember, but you'll scale small outbuildings and things like that, and get up onto things, and you can jump towards power lines and like pipes and stuff like that, and you'll grind them, or you'll hang on underneath them, you'll slide. And so yeah, that wasn't bad. I don't think it's going to like set the world on fire, but it was solid experience. So that wasn't too shabby. Anything else?
I'm just trying to think what else I played that wasn't sort of. I spent some brief time with the new Pixel Junk game. Not
not
Factory or whatever, Nom Nom something, I think it's Nom Nom Factory or something like that.
Nom Nom something.
Yeah. You see, this is the kind of level of professionalism you've come to expect from us. Like,
it's,
you know,
the word Nom Nom in it.
Yeah, Pixel Junk Nom Nom something. I went into it having literally zero clue of what it was. So it's sort of this weird sort of platform type defense sort of game. It comes across a little bit like Starbound or something like that, in the sense basically you're running a soup factory is the idea, and you have to basically you start with your little factory that you've got that has a couple of things, and you have to go underground and mine for sort of your character has like a buzzsaw sort of thing. You have to basically dig underground and find ingredients and find materials that you can use. Well, money that you can use to sort of buy upgrades and things for your thing. So
I was about to say, if you're drilling stuff out of the ground, that sounds like some bad soup, to be honest.
Yeah, well, you know, it's sort of you get all sorts of things like you cut vines and you find mushrooms and stuff underground, and you take them back to your factory and you combine them to make sort of a soup, and then that machine is then programmed to make that specific. You can have multiple soup machines that basically they all. Once you put two ingredients in and it creates a soup based on those two ingredients,
right.
You then take that soup, put it in a rocket, and the rocket basically delivers it to wherever, the people or whatever, whoever wants the soup. I don't know, I wasn't paying that much attention. But
people need soup, Mike.
Yeah, people do need soup. And once you've done, you have to build sort of more soup little soup machines once you've actually put one together, because it constantly does the. It does the same. I've lost my train of thought there. It does the same. It basically, once you've made a specific type of soup in the machine, that machine then can only produce that soup. So you have to go and get the same ingredients to make more of it, and then you have to build. As you earn money, you can expand. You can build your factory, expand it, add more sort of bases, and then add more machines so you can make all different soups. Because it sort of seemed a bit long, I don't know what the ultimate. I only played sort of through the tutorial level. I didn't even finish it, but I was there for quite a while because it's quite a slow process. So I don't know what the ultimate aim was.
Right.
But it's sort of. It's quirky enough anyway, probably sort of. Probably one of possibly the most unusual game to come out of that studio, I would think, in my opinion.
Eden was a bit funky, but
I think that's the only one I haven't got around to playing yet. Eden.
Yeah, well, I suppose it had a clear mechanic. Eden, which was just swing about a lot. But.
Yeah, I mean, you can also hire. You can also get sort of upgrades. You mine. I don't know what they're supposed to be. They look like little, like old floppy disks. I don't know what they're actually supposed to be, but they're like basically orange floppy disks is what they look like. You collect 10 of them or whatever, and you turn them into a key, which you can use to unlock other things you can build. Well, that's the other thing as well. Once you've put a particular soup, you can then build a soup machine for cheaper than, I think it's cheaper than sort of, it costs you less of your currency than the standard ones.
Right.
But again, that can only make, it makes that specific soup sort of a weird thing. I'm not sure exactly what the aim is. Are you supposed to get a higher market share as possible? I think the aim is to get 100% market share. Each time you send a can of soup off, it increases your market share percentage in the corner, and I think you have to either get 100% or have a higher, or you have a rival who you have to try and get a higher percentage than them over a set course of 7 days by the looks of it.
Right. Okay.
So it's interesting. I'm not quite 100% sure what to make of it. It's certainly interesting enough, but I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
One of the weirder ones.
Yeah. I'll give you a break, 2 seconds. I'm gonna grab someone else. I'm gonna grab a child. This is Matthew. Say hello.
Hello.
Okay, so what game did you like the most that you've played so far?
I probably enjoyed the most a game that I can't remember the name of.
What was it? What did you do in it, and then we can remember the name?
Shooting.
Was it Elite Dangerous? Wasn't Elite Dangerous? Okay. Well, did you enjoy Elite Dangerous then?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. What did you like about Elite Dangerous?
The realistic space simulation graphic physics and the very in-depth graphics.
Cool. Did you had some pretty crazy flight sticks? You didn't play. You haven't played Elite yet, no?
I haven't. No.
Have you seen the stand?
I've seen the big stand. As I've not played. The thing is, and I'm probably going to go down as probably a gaming heretic for this. I've never played the original Elite. So.
I've just killed Mike. I think there was a certain window for the Elites. There was. I played the first one on the Spectrum, and then I played the second one, Frontier, and First Encounter. I played on the Amiga, and then that's where it sort of ended. So if you sort of missed that period, or you were like someone who had a console or whatever during that period, that was pretty much it, really. So
I don't know. I had a Plus 4 and a Commodore 64 back in those days, so I don't know what that says, but I didn't... What was I? I must have been about 6 at the time, so I don't know.
Right. Okay. Let me see if I can find anything else out. Was there anything else that you particularly enjoyed?
I enjoyed all the games. They were really, really good, and it was nice to see what's coming up soon, and what I will be making ideas about what I'm going to buy, and what's going to be best for me. And I really, really enjoyed what variety of games there were.
Did you like that? Did you like Sunset Overdrive much? I've said it wasn't bad, but what did you think?
I thought it was all right. It was an interesting type of game and not really seen before, but I think it could work. It might need some more polishing before that happens, though. Maybe with larger parties, or maybe easier to get. I found it a little bit hard to control. There seems to be a little bit too many buttons, or buttons in weird places that don't really make sense.
Right. I saw you playing a game called How to Be a Tree. How did you find that?
It was very interesting. It was... I don't think it was very, very realistic to its name. It wasn't really how to be a tree. It was more how to be a weird physics object that threw itself around a lot.
Right. Was there any point to it at all?
No, there was no point to it at all. You were going after these triangle things that don't really make sense, that are part of your ancestors.
Excellent. You played How to Be a Tree as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And sort of... Yeah, I wasn't sure what to make of that one. Because it sort of... All I could tell was I actually literally was sat there for the first couple of minutes, just not the eye thing saying, "Oh, don't move," yeah. Yeah. I was sat there for a couple of minutes thinking, "How long is this going to go on?" Say, I was wondering, is this going to move me, or am I going to move myself? And I just sat there for a minute. I thought, I just wanted to see what happened. I thought, let's just press something and see what happens.
It's just constantly coming up on. Basically, you get there and it's literally a tree made up of they're vector splines all put together with little points of articulation. So it's there and it's just a white background. It's constantly saying, "That's it. Stay still. I'm watching you. Are you relaxing? Don't move, will you?" And stuff like that. And sort of, as you just don't until you press a button, then it kind of just freaks out.
Yeah, so it goes, what are you doing? You're going to ruin yourself and all this. And then it goes into some weird thing where you have all these ancestors and stuff. There's some sort of spirit or something tells you, you have all these ancestors. You have to collect all these triangles or something. And it's sort of, so you basically move around and you can sort of shrink. You can make the tree sort of wrap itself up into a tiny thing to go under things, or you can make it sort of turn huge. And basically it says... And he even says to you, I think at one point he says, "Well, you can press such a button to go over here, or you can just hold up and right and just unleash the chaos." At which point you do that, and you basically just go, flying off into the sky. Basically, says, you can press this, you can do this to go up the platforms, or you can basically just go, sod it, I'm just gonna go mad and just fly up. So I did get stuck on one bit where there was sort of a little gap under the ground about halfway up, and I couldn't for the life of me figure out how I was supposed to get through it. But
yeah, seems to be we got stuck on a few bits and pieces, didn't we, in the indie section.
Yeah, it does that. I mean, on that note, I mean, there was a sort of a point and click game called, and I'll just dig it out, here we go, Toriyansei. I don't know how you say it, but anyway, it's a point and click adventure. You're playing a woman who is in and I didn't get very far until I got stuck and had no clue what I was supposed to do. But basically, all as far as I got was you're a woman in an office who has. Everyone leaves to go in the lift, and you can't get in the lift because you've lost your ID or something like that. There's no text or anything. This is just what I'm gathering from the little picture, because all the story seems to be told in little bubbles with symbols in it, rather than actual text. So I say I can't find. So okay, you need your ID. So where are you supposed to get it from? And it's one of those classic things where as you do when you're stuck in an adventure game, you know, you're trying to combine everything, trying everything with everything. And, you know, basically when nothing was happening, I just gave up on it, basically. It's like I've got as far as putting a ring pull on an Ethernet cable. And had no idea.
As you do.
And had no, you know, it's like, okay, I want a drink. Oh, here's a coin under the cushion on the sofa. Okay, let's use that. Keep the ring pull, put it on an Ethernet cable, now what do I do with it? And I got to a point where I just didn't know, I just stopped and just thought, yeah.
Another one of those, you know what, I've had enough.
So I literally, as a result, I don't know what to make of it at all, because I didn't get far enough to sort of decide. It's got a nice sort of weird cel-shaded cartoon kind of look to it. I like the look of it, so apart from that, I don't really know what else. Because of how I wasn't able to get very far, I don't know what else to make of it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so there was quite a good range of things in the left field and indie section, in the whole resed part. And it was sort of a good mixture of stuff that was quite far along, quite polished. Things like Never Alone and Volume, Speedrunners. Warlock? I can't remember what that thing's called again. Now the Underworld. War of the Underworld? I can't remember. War for the Underworld, yeah, that. And Big Farm and all those sort of things all look quite far along. And then you had all of those, you know, that look quite professional and quite well produced. Yeah, Prison Architect.
And then the annual appearance of Prison Architect.
Yeah, yes.
There's been every EGX show for the last 4 years or something.
Yeah. And then you kind of go around the corner, and then you've got the real kind of what you would term maybe the real indies, where they've got it on a PC or a tablet or whatever, and then they've written on the wall what the game is and drawn little doodles of how to use the controllers and things like that.
It was a contrast from, I seem to remember one year where they didn't actually have, if the developers didn't have some sort of poster that they put up the wall, you knew nothing about the game aside from it was just sat there.
Yeah.
You know, they had no controls, it didn't have any information about the game, it was just sat there until the second day, I think, somebody went round and started writing stuff up, but it was like, I remember that very clearly, like, sitting there thinking, okay, so, I've had to actually click the game to actually find out what it's even called. Yeah. And there's no information about it at all, so I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
But this time it does have a very much as you say, an indie feel with all it being scribbled on the walls.
Yeah, it was good then. This year it wasn't like a little sweat corridor. At least they actually gave a lot of space this year, so that was nice.
Well, they've taken it a different direction this year, because it's sort of the past. It's always been. I think it's sort of a reflection of how big indie games are these days. That sort of. It's always been at the indie arcade, so it's just been general indie games, whereas now some of them have moved out into sort of the bigger, now they've got the whole resed area, some of them have moved it back and sort of, so what was the indie arcade has become more of a sort of, well, as it's called, left field, so it's sort of more unusual sort of games.
It would have been what is now sort of the sort of indie res action is more the sort of stuff you would have seen occupied by sort of a mid to low tier publishers, you know, in previous years, you know, like your THQs and stuff like that. I've thought this year it's a bit quieter, like actual stand wise. There seems to be less here than in previous years. There's no big EA section. There's a couple of EA games around, but there's no like massive huge section laid out for EA and things like that. So I don't know whether it feels a bit quieter.
It's only the like individual game things. You got like Assassin's Creed is taking up quite a large space upstairs. Mind you, I've just realised that's in the 18 section, so that's probably what I know. But that aside, they've got about. I've seen lots of Ubisoft staff milling around.
Ubisoft seem to have quite a presence upstairs in the 18 bit, whereas in other sections, you know, you may see them normally. You'd normally see Assassin's Creed sort of on the floor. They'd have a non sort of 18 demo for it, but this time
There's no. I mean, I think that was the big thing in previous years. You'd actually have, if you looked at your map, it would specifically have a section denoted EA. I mean, it has the console specific sections. You've got your Wii U, you've got your dedicated Wii U section, you've got your dedicated Xbox One section as well as them being mixed and sort of, you know, you've got your exclusives in those sections, and then you've got your multi-platform things sort of dotted all over everywhere. But
yeah.
There's a lot more actual open space as well, which I've noticed, which is just as well because there's a lot more people here.
Yeah, there's quite a few people. I played that. Was it Scream Ride? Have you played that one?
No.
No. We played that yesterday. That was the one where you build your own. Basically, it's from Frontier, the guys that did Roller Coaster Tycoon and stuff. So you build your own roller coasters, and then you populate it with some people, and then the idea is you have to ride yours, and I guess I think other people's roller coasters, and you try and go as fast as you can, the fastest speed through the things, the highest scream levels and stuff like that. And I don't know, it was all right. I don't know what you thought of that Scream Ride, Matt.
I didn't really like it that much. I liked the building part of it, but I didn't really see the point of adding on to the extra thing. I mean, they did Roller Coaster Tycoon and that worked well, but this is just kind of adding on something that isn't really necessary and I don't really think is needed. Although the collisions of impacting buildings and stuff like that were very good.
Yeah, there was like a. It's like three subsections to the game. One was the building, one was the sort of riding the coaster you made, and then the last one was you could you end up with like a ball and a big swinging arm full of your little dudes, and then you swing it at buildings and knock them down, kind of a bit like boom blocks or something like that. So it was okay. That was a revealed here kind of thing, but not exactly. Exciting. Reminded me a lot of the other Frontier games that they've made, look wise, like Zoo Tycoon 3 and the kind of other Kinect stuff, Kinectimals. They've got a certain look and feel that kind of takes its lead from the old Xbox avatars and stuff. So I don't know, that was all right. And the only other thing I can think of at the moment, I played Ori and the Blind Forest, which no one else has played, I don't think. That was by, I can't remember the name of the studio, Half Moon or something like that, I can't remember. They've made a few previous games for other companies, and that has completely slipped my mind, I thought they were. But yeah, it looks very nice. It's a platform game. You play Ori, who's what looks like basically like a kind of a light formed like foal or fawn or something like that, just sort of prancing through a forest, and it sort of has a little look and structure of it very similar to something like Limbo, but it's faster paced, heavier combat. It looks in some ways also like Ubisoft's Outland or Outlander that they did a few years ago. And you go from section to section. It's like a cross between a Metroid game and sort of your sort of typical puzzle explorer game. So you'll run around your platform and stuff, and you find different abilities. As you find other different abilities, you can do things. Like one of the first things you find is like a little glowing orb. That little glowing orb tells you about what's going on in the forest that you're in, and you can then use that glowing orb to attack enemies or blow apart like bramble bushes and things like that that are blocking your way. So that lets you get to other sections. So you then traverse a bit further. Then you have to find there's loads of collectibles. There's like orbs for energy. There's orbs for special abilities. There's orbs for upgrades. There's like keystones for four doors and stuff that block your way. They'll be around the level. And there's like some mild puzzle and exploration elements as well. So that's a pretty good one. It's probably one of my favourite games from the show, to be honest. Looks really great, moves really fast. And that's next year, I think, that one's coming out. So, yeah. Anybody, anything else? We covered Elite Dangerous. That was great.
I'm just trying to think now. I briefly glossed over the crew, but never actually talked about it much. It's out in November, I think, if memory serves. And so, all I really got to play was sort of essentially racing sections, sort of. I was struggling a bit, as I mentioned, because it took me a moment to realise that the game was set to manual gear shifting.
Nice.
Which I never use. I was sat there in the car accelerating, and the car was just sat still, and I'm like, what's going on? And then I looked and saw it was in neutral, and like looked down and saw that like the instructions had a gear shifting. I'm like, okay. And I was also reminded why I play with automatic gears, because when I go manual, I was horrible. I finished last every time, dead last, because I just never got my gear shifts in the right place. I was like thinking, okay, I'm stuck at 100 in third. I need to shift down before I can go any faster or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
It certainly looked good. And there's a lot going on, because with you racing through sort of a very busy city, it sort of. You know, taking on rivals and sort of that. There's some sort of I from what I gathered from the particular thing they saw, it was like you're in some sort of gang and sort of some friendly. I assume they're friendly rivals, because they say, hey, how about a race? You know, and you sort of go, yeah, all right then. And so it wasn't so much a race, as more they were racing. I was just poodling along behind them, like doo 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 doo.
You're the rear guard,
How would you drive this thing again? So that's the thing. It seemed good enough. I mean, the handling, aside from, in spite of my terrible gear shifting, the car certainly handled. The driving was certainly good. It handled really well.
Last year, I found the crew last year seemed to me that it was pretty tight, good handling, and nice sense of sort of speed, and you know. So why they delayed it, I don't know, but.
No, I mean, it's sort of, yeah, it's good to see. To say it's very, very sort of challenging trying to race through sort of a bustling city while you're going through it. So I crashed into oncoming traffic I don't know how many times. Sort of, no, I need, maybe I need glasses, I don't know. it certainly enjoy, it's a, my personal control problems aside, it seemed alright. I mean, I wasn't blown away by it, because I think probably because I'd probably played that many racing games by that point. I was like, yeah, you know, it sort of felt just, you know. Well, I mean, probably with more story and stuff like that, and I'd probably get a better idea for it. But it seemed good enough, you know. I mean, that's probably all I can. That's probably the most I can sort of suggest about it. I don't know whether I'd point, you know, excuse the pun. I don't know whether I'm suffering from driving game burnout by that point, but. I'd like another burnout, incidentally, but
I don't know what they're up to. Hardly any of Criterion exists now, but they
probably not. But yeah, so that was
okay.
It seemed good enough.
So the other thing I think I played was a game called Shoe, which is a PS4 game. I don't know if you saw that. It was just it was a little indie title on PS4. It's like on one of the edge parts. It's kind of a platformer again. Nice looking aesthetic. Heavy kind of Japanese influence to it in the look. It wasn't manga, but it was sort of the sort of style you might expect from a Nintendo game or something like that, but not the rest of the aesthetic. And you sort of, again, run left to right kind of thing. You find other people as you go through. At the start, you can jump, but that's pretty much all you can do, if I remember rightly. And you find some other person, you rescue them from the level, and there you've got an umbrella, so you can now glide, or there'll be upward jets, and you can ride those. And then a little bit later in the level, you'll find another person who has the ability to control these like air spouts, so you can use those to blow you from place to place and things like that. So that was quite good. The actual control was slightly off. It seemed to prioritise animation over response. But like, you know, this was these are early builds. These are alpha. I think we said alpha build on it. So hopefully if they can tighten that up a bit, I think it'll be sort of an interesting little distraction. Again, not one of these games that sort of, you know, rock your world, but a game that will certainly give you some fun. So yeah, then at one point this massive black outline of a dinosaur type thing came chasing you across the screen. It just said run, and you had to run. And so yeah, that was good. So that's pretty much it. So we'll finish off. I don't know if Michael,
I don't know if it's worth mentioning the fact that, whether it's the size of the show, the fact that they did unveil a couple of games for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Here. I mean, I think, what was it? Total War Attila, which I think they've been teasing that. They said they were going to actually name it at the show.
Yeah.
And then there was, the sort of Ollie Ollie 2, which was like, I remember, because I saw on the morning of the first day, they had the screens with the big signs that said embargoed until 3 p.m. I'm like, okay, so clearly somebody's announcing. I didn't know the developer schedule thing, so I was like, I don't know. So clearly somebody's announcing something at 3 p.m, but I don't know who. So
yeah.
But that was Ollie Ollie 2. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Not exactly a world shaker, but
You told me that was what it was. I'm like.
Yeah, because if you look at the developer session schedule, it basically said 3 till 4. I can't remember the name of the studio now, but the ones, and it said in brackets underneath responsible for Ollie Ollie and something else, and it's like, I wonder what the reveal at 3 o'clock could be for the, you know, so that tied up. And then there was the other reveal at 5, which was the Total War Attila, wasn't it? So, yeah. Okay, well, unless Mike adds anything else after the fact, we're probably all done for this week. That's Mike. Well, you can find Mike kicking around the internet at Ognork, or right. Well, where else can we find you, Mike?
Yeah, at Ognork, Ognawk, weird spelling. If you want to get my written thoughts, there'll be a few things that I'll have played after this that I'll probably put into writing rather than talk about it, but BrutalGamer.com is where that's all going to turn up over the next few days when I get round to it. So
days to week.
Yeah.
And then Matthew is over on is it CRC Gaming and CRC Space on YouTube, is that right?
Yeah, CRC Gaming, youtube.com/CRC Gaming. If you want to see what I got up to and what games I review and my thoughts, more detailed thoughts, then I'll be uploading some videos on that sometime soon.
Cool. And then Twitter is me at Zeth_W, and then writings and general gibberish, I'll be over at gamesfiends.com. We will put together another episode of Reuse Assets very probably soonish. Within the next sort of 3 to 4 weeks, as we can, and there will be more random thoughts and more games will be out by then. Any closing things?
Reusedassets.com and reusedassets on Twitter. So
yeah,
let's find out more about. If you happen to have stumbled upon this without knowing about either of those, first of all, well done.
Yeah, you get points.
You get some imaginary points for somehow stumbling upon this, and yeah, so that's where you can at least, well, in terms of the website, that's where you'll find all the previous episodes or all one of them.
Yes. If you want to go through our back catalogue of one this time out, if you want to go through another our back catalogue, there's all the old Brutal Gamer stuff. But I think that's been sadly taken offline for health and safety reasons.
I keep saying I'm gonna put what old episodes I have up somewhere. I think I still have one old episode up on SoundCloud somewhere, but I can't for the life of me remember. Oh no, I think I did actually create a Brutal Gamer account on SoundCloud.com, so I imagine I would guess the address is soundcloud.com/brutalgamer, but it only has one really old episode from about 5 years ago on there, or something ridiculous like that. Probably not that far back, actually.
Or maybe we'll work again the old ones up at some point once we've finished working again these ones up. That'll be it. Barry may well be back next time, who knows. Lee and the rest of the guys, regular recording. You'll have to forgive the fact that we are probably a little bit shoddy, because we are sat on a show floor and there are various things exploding in different directions. That's it from EGX 2014 for us, and we'll see you soon. Cheers.
Bye.